You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So theme number one this hour, you are not alone. There are more than 26 million people now out of work, others scraping by. The coronavirus stimulus payments, they started going out. They're valued at up to $1,200 per adult, $500 per dependent child. And these amounts seem cut and dried, but so many questions remain. Have you received your stimulus check? Have you used it? Are you still waiting for it? What questions do you have about the logistics? Have you tried to speed up the process by entering information on the IRS website? Did it work? Bring your questions, your situation, 800-642-1234. Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money, and she's been covering the ins and outs of the CARES Act stimulus benefits. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So the IRS starts sending money allocated through the CARES Act to Americans last week. What do we know? Who received these payments?
So the initial batch went to people who filed either a 2018 tax return or 2019 return and had a refund. That is key because the IRS has deposit information on them in which they can electronically deposit the payment. So that was the first group. Some other folks, just a little small percentage, may have gotten some money, but the bulk of the folks who got it, they filed for those 2 years and had a refund. Now, I've been hearing from tons of people, well, I pay them and they have my deposit information for when they take out money that I owe. So they can't, according to the CARES Act and the way the Treasury Department interpreted this clause or provision in the CARES Act, that you have to proactively tell the IRS, yes, please put my stimulus payment into this bank account. So that's why they can't use your payment information.
Okay, so this IRS website tool, Get My Payment, that must be a place that is being frequented by many Americans. What do you do there?
So there are two portals that they have set up. One, Get My Payment, is for people who want to give the IRS their direct deposit information so they don't have to wait for a check, because there's no telling how long it would be for that check, although I am hearing that some people have started to receive a check. So if you want to direct deposit your stimulus payment, you'd have to use this tool, Get My Payment, at IRS.gov. The problem is there are lots of glitches with it. If your information doesn't match, maybe you moved, maybe somebody typed in a wrong number, either you or the IRS, and so people are getting locked out, and so there's a lot of frustration, or they get this page that says we can't determine your status of your payment, and so people think that means, oh, I'm not getting any money. And as you can imagine, with millions of people getting this money and trying to use this tool, there are glitches to be had and people can't get through. So there's a lot of frustration and fear. And then there's a group of people who are getting money who don't have to file a tax return because they don't earn enough. Some Social Security recipients, people on disability, people who don't have, you know, jobs at all. And so there's a new tool that the IRS put up, a non-filer tool. So you'd have to use that tool to let the IRS know who you are and where to send your money. That hasn't had as many glitches, but again, some people use the tool who plan to file, and so they get kicked out. So you really, when you go to these pages for the IRS, you have to read the directions to make sure you're using the appropriate tool for your situation.
We're talking with Michelle Singletary. She's a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She's helping understand where these stimulus checks are and the rollout of them. Have you received yours? Have you used it? Are you still waiting for your check? What questions do you have about the logistics and timing? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a call now. Wayne is joining us from Rockland this morning. Hi, Wayne. What's your question?
My question is, I took my daughter on my taxes last year, but she's 20 years old, so I didn't get a child support or whatever the child thing for her. Can she file on her own for the stimulus package?
So don't hang up yet, Wayne. So have you filed 2019 yet?
I'm not sure. It's with my tax attorney. I don't know if she has or not yet.
Okay, so did you claim her as a dependent even though she's 20?
Yes.
So So then she cannot get a payment. So she can't file her own. If you claim her as a dependent, that's one of the provisions in the CARES Act. If the adult child is or anybody can be claimed as a dependent, they cannot get a separate payment on their own. Now, if you don't claim her and she's taking care of herself, then, yes, she would qualify. And it's important to note that that dependent child for the 500 extra has to be under 17. So I have college students who I'm still taking care of. That may be your situation. And so I don't qualify for a payment. But if I did, I still couldn't get the $500 per child because they're all over 17 years old.
Got it. Wayne, thank you so much. Let's bring in Mark now in Reedsburg with a question. Mark, hi.
Hi. So the question is, if a person died in 2019, they sent him money anyway because he filed in 2018, can they keep the money?
So that's a really good question. It depends on a whole bunch of situations, and the IRS is still working that out. So oftentimes, because I wrote a column recently that a lot of deceased people are getting checks. So if you're a spouse and you filed jointly, and that year that spouse was still alive but died during the year, you are allowed to file a joint return, and the refund would be your money, and in this case, the stimulus money would be your money, according to the IRS. Where it gets a little murky is if the person passed away in 2018, or it's the money's sent to a bank account that is designated for heirs. That's where we're not sure, and the IRS has not given any guidance of whether or not you can keep that money. And estates can't keep the money for sure, according to the law. So if you're in one of these gray areas, you're not a spouse, a surviving spouse, I would suggest that you leave that money in the bank account until you get some guidance. Otherwise, the IRS may come back at you to get that money back.
All right, so we stay tuned there. Mark, thanks. Let's bring in Chris now with a question. Chris in Kenosha, hi.
Hi, thank you. My question is, for those of us who continue to get regular mail, we don't do things direct deposit. Is it safe? And we've heard it could be months before we get anything. And then also, should we go online with all the problems to change it? What do you think?
Oh, worried about internet security there and the security of direct deposit.
So it depends on if you can afford to wait, sure, and the money will come in the mail. You can the problem right now is you don't know where that processing is at this point. If they've already started to process your check, going online and putting in the direct deposit information is not going to stop that process. But if you think that it can, you can still try to go on to Get My Payment and put in your direct deposit information. But if you're uncomfortable with that, then you'll just have to wait for the check. Now, I've heard some people have already received a check. The vast majority of people who are getting checks have not received it. And it could take several weeks before they get to you because the IRS, like a lot of other businesses, has shut down because of the virus. So their people are not in the offices to be processing and opening up mail. So in the one sense, we've got to be patient, but clearly people are in need, and I understand the frustration of waiting for that check for money that you need.
We're talking with Washington Post personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary is our guide to the coronavirus stimulus checks. Were you laid off from your job? Did you get the $1,200 in help? What did you use it on? Are you still waiting for your check? What questions do you have about where it is? Bring it on, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a minute with Michelle Singletary right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the stimulus checks from the giant economic stimulus package here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Payments started landing in bank accounts last week, but it could take months more for some people to get them by snail mail. We have Washington Post personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary, who is our guide to the particulars. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go with Rona joining us from Cameron. Hi, Rona.
Hi, good morning. My question for your guest is, well, first of all, I have to say I'm so excited to get to talk to someone that might help us have a little clue as to what's going on. We paid our 2018 taxes. some years we get refunds, some years we pay in. And we haven't received our stimulus check yet, so I went online to find out why. And it could be because my husband is a veteran, and I have heard that if you're a veteran, or I read that if you're a veteran, your information went to the VA. So I'm wondering if she can shed some light into what's happening with the VA process and how that might, you know, work out for us.
Right. So did you, you haven't filed for 2019 yet, correct?
We're just waiting for it to come back from the accountant.
So then that means it hasn't processed. Okay. So in 2018, did you get a refund or did you have to pay?
We paid in.
So that's probably why there's a delay, because the first batch went out to people who had direct deposit refunds. When you pay, they can't use that same information to send you the money. So your money is probably in the process to send a check at this point. If you want to try to put in your direct deposit information, go to irs.gov. Please be careful to type that correctly. It's the IRS website, irs.gov. There's a Get My Payment tool that you can go in, if you can get into it, because a lot of people are having trouble getting into it. If you can get into it, you can give them your direct deposit information. If they have not started to process your check, you can get it into your bank account. If they have, then you'll just get a check, and there's been a wait. I think that's the misunderstanding. When they rolled this out and said, oh, 80 million people got money, so the second half of people, about 70 million who haven't gotten money, are like, well, wait, what happened to me? And when it came to veterans, you know, these systems don't talk to each other, and so veterans were kind of put into the second category. But because you filed a return, you are in a different queue. So you should, your payment isn't sort of based on your husband's veteran status at this point. It's probably based on your 2018 status.
Rana, thank you so much. Let's go to Roger now in La Crosse. Hi, Roger. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. Yes, my question is, I have a friend, and she is a citizen of Canada, but she's been working in the U.S. for the last 2 years on a work visa and paying taxes. She's paid in both years, and she was wondering about the stimulus, if she's eligible for it or if it's just because she's had to pay in, she's got to wait a little longer.
So this, I'm sorry, did you say this was a friend, or I didn't hear the first part of you?
Yeah, yep, it's a friend of mine.
So does she have a Social Security number?
I'm not sure. She's a Canadian,
so you have,
Canadian citizen, and she's here on a work visa.
So I don't think that she qualifies. You have to have a Social Security number, for one thing. So if she doesn't have a Social Security number, then she wouldn't get it. And this is one of those little murky areas as well, because there's some visa holders who have been giving stimulus payments because they have a Social Security number and they have been paying taxes, even if they got a refund. So I can't tell you more than that because the IRS hasn't told me where these folks fit. So again, if she has a Social Security number, and also if she's been living in the States, there's a test that she has to meet, then she might get one. But it doesn't sound like your friend will get a stimulus payment.
All right, Roger. Well, thank you for inquiring for your friend. Let's go to a question from Jun joining us from Stevenson, Michigan this morning. Hi, Jun.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, listen, I'm also Security. And I have direct deposit. I also filed taxes, but I never have to pay in or get any money back. Am I in line for that stimulus check? And if so, will it be deposited into my Social Security account because I have direct deposit for it?
Yes. Yeah, so do you meet the income level? So are you filing as an individual single?
The wife and I file jointly.
Okay. And so what's your adjusted gross income?
Like $32,000.
Okay, so you should qualify for a payment. With the Social Security recipients, if you haven't filed a return in which you got a deposit, they're going to use your Social Security information, and they say however you get your Social Security payment, that's how they'll give you your stimulus check. So if you have your Social Security payments direct deposited, that's where your stimulus payment should come. However, that's not a guarantee. It could be that they're going to send you a check, because if there's something wrong, some number missing, some address doesn't match up, then they're going to cut you a check. And in your case, if you file married jointly, it would be for $2,400. So you should be getting a payment, whether it's direct deposit or a check is sort of the murky area. But according to the IRS, based on how you get your Social Security payment, it should be direct deposited.
We have Washington Post personal finance expert Michelle Singletary. She's with us as we discuss the CARES Act, the economic relief checks being sent to Americans, with your questions front and center. Let's bring in Keel now in Eau Claire. Hi, Keel. What is your question?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I filed, what I understand is Steve Mnuchin for the Feds. The treasurer saying that in order to get the stimulus check, we did get an extension on turning in our taxes 2019 to July, what I understand. Now, my wife and I have to pay in on 17 and 18. They are taking money out of my account. Now, follow-up question that the lady had before. Do I have to file the 19 in order to make contact with them to set up for IRS.gov to get the stimulus check?
No, you do not. If they do not have a process, that's also key, process. So you might have filed, but they haven't processed it yet. They're going to make the stimulus payments based on either your 2018 return or 2019 return. So whichever one they have processed in their system. So in your case, it sounds like the 2018, they will base your payment on that year. So if you meet the income level, you'll get the payment. Now, let's just say 2018, you made more. And 2019, they're going to be basing it on your 2020. You can still get the full payment if your 2020 income is within that limit. I know this sounds also complicated, y'all, but in your case, Keel, if you have a 2018 return, you meet the income level, you will get a payment. You do not have to file your 2019.
Keel, thank you so much for calling in. Let's bring in Pat now with a question. Pat in Viroqua. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Yeah, what's your question?
My question is that I moved to Wisconsin from out of state last summer, and I did file for 2018. I did receive a refund direct deposit, but it was direct deposited to the state that I was living in last year. So I'm concerned that if they tried to send the stimulus check to the account from last year's direct deposit, that account has been closed because now I'm in Wisconsin. And what happens if they've already sent that out to a bank account that doesn't exist any longer?
So it's you got a refund, so they would send it to that. Since you haven't filed 2019, the bank will reject it because the account is closed. They'll send it back to the IRS electronically, and the IRS is most likely going to cut you a check for your stimulus money. So the bank, if the account is closed, they're not going to receive it or shouldn't receive it, and they'll send it back to the IRS. So it could be that your payment's going to take a little bit longer, depending on how long these transactions take. But you'll still get your payment. It'll just probably be in a check to your whatever. Now, hopefully you still live at the address.
No, I don't. That's it. I've moved to another state.
Yeah. So you need to go online to IRS.gov to the Get My Payment app to put in your information. Or if you can't get through that, did you put in a change of address?
No, not with the IRS. I didn't put in a change of address.
No, with the mail, with the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh, yes.
So then in that case, they should be able to send your payment to the new address. But just to be sure, go on and put in your information to get my payment.
All right, Pat, thank you for calling in. Michelle, we only have a few moments left, and you're a personal finance columnist. You have seen the economy change drastically. What advice are you giving people in these uncertain financial times?
Yeah. It's really tough when you're this in the position that I am in. So I would just say, if you have lost your job or you've been furloughed, that just, you know, hoard your cash, pay the bills that absolutely need to be paid, and that may not include your credit card bill. You know, you're going to call your lenders and ask for a break for the things that are not a necessity, and then just pay what you can pay. If you're still working and you're still a little scared, you're not sure about the security of your job, is, you know, if this goes on longer, then, you know, save, build up that emergency fund. If you already have a built up emergency fund and you're pretty secure and okay, then help your neighbor. You know, we all have to help each other. Reach out to your church, your religious organization, a nonprofit to help somebody else.
Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the syndicated column, The Color of Money. Coming up, we talk through managing finances during this uncertain time. What type of relief do you need? How are you getting by? It's your personal finance questions front and center with a writer from NerdWallet. Right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. We're tackling your personal finance questions here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It's your money, and we're going to touch on a lot of areas like loans and payment relief to better understand what help is out there to get through this coronavirus crisis. How has your financial position changed? Did you have an emergency fund? Have you dipped into it? What questions do you have about prioritizing bills and dealing with creditors and banks? We're at 800-642-1234. Sarah Rathner is a personal finance writer for NerdWallet. It's a financial advice website that uses information from experts to solve everyday money problems. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So for people who have lost income or suffered financially due to this crisis, does financial planning also stop? Does it take a hit?
No, because the whole purpose of financial planning is to help you in good times and in bad. That's why you have a plan, because, you know, they say that, you know, you make plans and God laughs. But the whole idea of thinking about different scenarios and how they could potentially play out for you is so you can feel confident that even when things don't go well, you have a course that you can stay on that can hopefully help you ride it out.
Oh, so you have plan A and plan B, plan C. So
I think most people are on plan X right now, honestly. But yeah, I mean, that's really the point. It really helps you sleep at night to know that you can do this.
Well, especially with the stress, the anxiety, can you make a budget and think critically about managing money when you don't have any coming in?
Yes, you can. And it becomes very important to do that when you don't have money coming in, because, you know, you really need to think about, well, how much can I, you know, how much do I have now to float me for a couple weeks or a couple of months? And then what resources do I need to tap into right now to bring in additional money so I can hold out even longer and know how long I can last on the money that I have? And so it is really important to examine your spending and, you know, see what options you have.
How can we access financial relief with a credit card company or credit card payments? Because so many people put their charges and their daily expenditures on a card.
All right. So if you are struggling to afford even the minimum payments on your credit card, call the number on the back of your card and talk to somebody at your credit card company. Right now, they're working with consumers on a one-on-one as needed basis to see what they could potentially do to help you afford your bills in the short term. So, you know, you can continue existing until you have a source of income again and can begin paying your bills as normal.
We've seen on their websites, the front of their websites, that their call volume is really high, and they've said that wait times are really long. Have you heard about wait times at all, or how people are able to access another human?
I mean, wait times across the board, across a bunch of different industries for customer service are really long right now. We're seeing this a lot with airlines, definitely financial services. So do as much of the legwork in terms of preparing your case, looking at the money you have coming in, kind of rethinking your budget, having everything in writing before you get on the phone, because you know you could expect to wait over an hour to talk to somebody. So do the work first, so by the time you actually get a human, you're ready to talk and you're ready to get down to business, because you don't want to waste all that time that you're sitting on hold.
Oh, so you might even have a little script prepared as to what you might say, and you have all your numbers right there.
Right. And, you know, it, maybe by examining your budget, you can figure out, well, I can't afford my minimum payment, but here's what I can afford to pay every month until things stabilize for me. And maybe they can work with you on that.
Mortgage and rent, they are a huge expense for people. What relief might be available with living expenses?
Right. So again, if you are struggling, a good first step is to either reach out to your mortgage lender or your landlord and talk about your situation with them and hope that they have something in place to help you out, keep a roof over your head, because that's really important. The CARES Act does spell out some, you know, mortgage and rent relief for renters. It could potentially halt evictions for a period of time, depending on the type of mortgage your landlord has. And that could be very helpful to keep a roof over your head, even if you can't afford to pay your rent right now, and even if your landlord is unable to work with you on that. And for mortgages, it does offer some sorts of different types of mortgage relief, forbearance and loan modification. So either basically, what that means in plain English is forbearance allows you to either reduce or eliminate your payment for a set period of time, and then you pay that back once that period of time ends. So it gives you a couple months of a break. And a loan modification is essentially changing the terms of your loan to lower your monthly payment.
Well, whether it's a mortgage or whether it's rent, if you still have to pay all those back payments by the time that deal is done, I mean, where are you going to have those thousands upon thousands of dollars to be able to make that big payment?
That is the issue, because your forbearance period might end, but it might not line up with you getting another job. And obviously, you know, if you've lost your job for several months and you're using up your savings to, you know, pay your bills, you're not going to have a store of savings available to make that large bill payment at the end of it. And so that's something people should keep in mind when they are looking into different types of hardship programs. Sometimes the terms are not favorable depending on your situation. And that's why you should really get all the information you need before you agree to anything and think about it, because it might not be worth the effort. You might need to think of another way to get by.
Sarah Rathner is with us. She's a NerdWallet personal finance expert as we explore economic relief options, the situations people are in, how to manage money in uncertain times. You can join in with your question. How has your financial situation changed as our world responds to this crisis? What types of relief do you need? Where have you found flexibility? Where have you found resources when it comes to managing bills and financial responsibilities? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. So, Sarah, let's move on to student loans. What financial relief is out there for people with student loans?
So anybody with federal student loans. Private loans are a different story. So federal loans, it's an important distinction. They have, through the CARES Act, an automatic 6-month forbearance. And that means that between March 13th of this year and September 30th of this year, no payments are due and no interest will build up, which is pretty unusual. That's a big break. And you don't have to pay a lump sum at the end of the 6-month period. What it might end up doing is kind of extending the term of your student loan a little bit at the end, but you won't risk this giant payment, you know, in October of this year. So that's pretty huge. That gives a lot of people the opportunity to reapply those funds elsewhere. And if you have student loans that qualify, you know, this could be an opportunity to, you know, sometimes people have, you know, hundreds or even over $1,000 a month in student loans. Think about what you can do with that money over the next 6 months.
And what about those private loans? Where would you start there?
I would start by contacting the bank that issues the loans and talking with them about your situation and see if there's something they can do for you.
If you haven't lost income but do have significant federal student loans you're paying into, how might you approach this?
So you could keep making payments, but this is an opportunity. You know, if you had other financial goals that you haven't really been able to fund, this could be time to reapply that money elsewhere. You know, maybe you will use it to build up your emergency savings fund, which is really important if you don't have that. Maybe you could use that money to contribute to a Roth or traditional IRA this year. You know, you can contribute up to $6,000. So that could potentially create that opportunity for you. You know, there are lots of things you can do with that money. And if you don't want to continue making payments, then you could do something else, and that's okay.
So redeploy it in another way that is also a very smart financial move that would help you in the long term.
Exactly.
When you look at insurance, we were talking insurance earlier, we're seeing a lot of auto insurance carriers, companies offering relief to customers due to the pandemic. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of the major insurance carriers offer discounts on premiums, or if you pay your premiums twice a year, so you've already covered about 6 months of your premium for this year, they'll actually offer to refund you the overpayment now that there's the discount applied. I saw that with my insurance provider as well. We didn't get any sort of notification, but we reached out to our insurance agent and said, hey, you know, are you doing anything for this? And he actually said yes. So it was definitely worth the time to email if you haven't heard anything from your auto insurance provider. That's huge. That's a big savings. You know, people just aren't driving as much as they were when they were commuting to work. So it's really nice to see that auto insurance companies are recognizing that.
Another issue is scams. When you go into the IRS website, you do to get your payment tool, you know, you do have to put in your Social Security number. Are you concerned about scams out there?
Oh, yeah. And we're definitely starting to see coronavirus related scams. Financial scams are always a concern, even before all of this started. I mean, my advice is if you ever receive a phone call or an email from somebody claiming to be a representative of any sort of financial institution or other company with that you have an account with, don't answer the email, hang up the call, go to the company's website and find out the contact information they publish on their site, whether it's a phone number or an email. Get in touch with them and say, hey, did you get in touch with me? Did you email me? Did you call me? If they say yes, and sometimes that is the case, then you can proceed with whatever it was they were asking. But if they say no, then a lot of these companies have fraud departments where you can talk to somebody about your experience and even forward the email you received so they can investigate.
So you can report it. NerdWallet personal finance expert Sarah Rathner is our guide to how to make these financial decisions in these times. Do you wonder how to readjust your savings and your budgeting? Are you struggling to figure out how to get by if your income has been wiped out by the pandemic? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a moment with Sarah Rathner here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're figuring out how to navigate personal finance and budgeting amid all this uncertainty that's swirling around the crisis. And the truth is, managing money in the middle of a pandemic is an unprecedented dilemma. So what do you want to tackle? Is it income, daily living expenses, debts, retirement accounts, cash savings? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We have NerdWallet's Sarah Rathner, who stays with us. Sarah, let's look at retirement funds and investments. How should we be thinking about these types of investments and our retirement right now?
You know, I know that market volatility is really scary, but at NerdWallet, we talk about investing for the long term. And a long time horizon kind of smooths out all of those roller coaster lumps and bumps that you see in the market. And so if you're talking about investing for retirement, this is a long term goal, especially if you're younger and you're earlier in your career. But even on the day you retire, you know, you need your money to last hopefully 20 or 30 years. So you can enjoy a nice long retirement. And that's still a long time horizon. You are still a long-term investor.
But what about people who had planned to retire, I don't know, 6 months from now, next year, maybe in the next few months by, you know, December 30th or something?
Yeah, you know, that's a really scary thing. My in-laws retired late last year, so that's definitely something we've talked about with them. You know, it is a good, you know, it's always a good time to talk to a financial advisor that you trust to get more personal information about your specific situation. But in general, you kind of want to think about your retirement in stages. You have the money that you need in the next couple of years, and then money you need sort of in the midterm, and then money you would need in the long term for 20 or 30 years down the line. And so the closer you are to needing that money, and this is true either in retirement or also out of it when you're still working, the less time horizon you have, the more conservatively you want to think about where to, you know, what to do with that money. So whether it's keeping it in, you know, a lower risk investment, or even in a savings account, then, you know, you can tap into that money without fearing market turns, you know. And then it's money that you need in the midterm and the long term that you keep invested in an appropriate vehicle.
So if you happen to have money to stash away right now in some type of investment fund, what should you be thinking about investing when it is a recession?
Well, you think about when it is you need to tap into that money. You know, let's say, for example, you're thinking about buying your first home in 3 years and you're saving up for a down payment. You probably don't want to invest the money for your down payment because you're going to need it so soon that you're probably not going to get great returns on that money. So that's an appropriate situation to be very conservative, even have it in savings. I bought my first home late last year, so that was definitely something that I did keeping a certain allocation of money in cash because I knew I would need to tap into it for my down payment. And then if you're talking about a longer term time horizon, you know, 5+ years in the future, really ride it out. This is scary, I know, but time in the market is important.
Timing, though, the market, you know, some people say, oh, you know, buy if you can right now when, you know, when stocks are so low. Do you at all get on that bandwagon?
If investing is always appropriate if your other financial goals are sorted out. So, you know, if you're paying off high interest debt, for example, it might not be the best time for you to start investing in taxable brokerage, right? But if you have money to spare after meeting your other financial obligations, then, you know, investing could be a good use of that money, depending on what your longer term goals are, you know, especially investing for retirement, that's really important. And you can invest for other reasons too.
Well, let's look at those day-to-day living expenses that just seem to be rolled into what it takes to live. Are there any small expenses that we might be able to get rid of right now in order to save some pennies?
Yeah, you know, everybody's spending habits have changed dramatically just in the last 2 months. You know, a lot of these expenses we had before, paying for gas to commute to work, paying for a gym membership, buying clothes because we're going into offices, you know, those expenses have gone way down. Other expenses have gone up. You know, you're buying more groceries for your family, maybe spending money on streaming services, activities for your kids now that they're at home all day, things like that. So this is a good time to look over where your money is going. And you can do that just by, you know, looking through a couple weeks worth of bank statements or credit card statements just to see what you're spending on now. And kind of figuring out, you know, where can I trim back? Do I really watch that particular streaming service? Do I really need to spend this much on groceries when we already have a full pantry? And, you know, you can also look at your fixed and variable costs. So it's not just about like wants and needs, but also what's in your control to change. So you might not be able to change your mortgage payment if assuming you can continue to afford your mortgage as it is and you don't need to get assistance with that. But you can change, you know, your food purchasing. You can change your use of utilities, electricity, gas, water. You can change your entertainment costs. So those variable costs are where you can find places to make changes.
Seems like cell phones, smartphones are just on the hip and absolutely necessary during this time because so much is happening online. What kind of negotiation can you do with your cell phone company?
I mean, you could definitely call and ask, you know, look over your usage of everything. Are you using, you know, do you need an unlimited data plan? Can you downgrade to something smaller? Do you need to upgrade your phone this year, or will your phone last longer? Could you get by just by changing the battery out, for example, which is a fraction of the cost? You know, do you need the big fancy name brand phone plan, or can you look into plans that are significantly less expensive? And they are out there. You know, there are plans that cost like under $20 a month. You know, it's a good time to like right size your cell phone plan and really match it to your usage rather than what's kind of automatic and easy.
We're figuring out what is realistic financial planning, budgeting, what it looks like during a pandemic. We have Sarah Rathner with us, and she's from NerdWallet. You can join in. Still time for your questions about your personal finance situation at 800-642-1234. So, Sarah, financial stress often comes with financial instability. How do you advise people to cope when everyone is just so emotional at this time and emotions and money don't really mix?
Yeah, you know, this is, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if any of us have seen a time like this in our lifetimes, and we hopefully never will again. It's you know, it's kind of, I joke that there's no such thing as FOMO right now because nobody's doing anything. Mm-hmm. If you could rest easy in the idea that everybody understands what you're going through because everybody's going through the exact same thing right now, I think that brings me a lot of comfort. And just know that, you know, we'll get through this. And for now, it's just important to be forgiving of yourself and forgiving of everyone around you because everybody's just kind of doing the best they can with a really bad situation.
If you're concerned about even getting food on the table, there have been a number of resources in communities, but also people stepping up, neighbors stepping up. How would you suggest that people reach out if they have never asked for help in the past?
You know, social media has been very helpful for this. You know, it's never been easier to kind of go public about what's going on in your life. And, you know, it's okay to ask for that help. It's important. And people want to step up. People are looking for ways to be helpful of their neighbors, of small business owners in their communities. You know, we're all in this together. And, you know, even if it's just, you know, dropping off groceries on your neighbor's front porch, you know, you could be doing a world of good just by helping somebody out in even a small way.
And that also makes you feel good at the same time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are lots of ways that you can do good right now. They don't necessarily have to cost you any money, but even just giving of your time. You know, it's not possible to volunteer in traditional ways right now, to go to a physical place and be around other people and volunteer with them because of social distancing. But there are still ways that you can help.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Rathner is a financial expert at NerdWallet. Just ahead, it's On Point as some places approach their third month of lockdown. We'll check back in with a quarantine researcher about what's working and what's not. That's On Point, just ahead. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.